First of all, thank you very much for being here today. In this session, we're going to be launching the SVRI research scholarships for career starters. I'm very happy to see you here today. My name is Tanner Ray. I am the person responsible of comms at SVRI. And we have organized this session in Spanish today, particularly for Caribbean and Latin American audiences, to explain a little bit about the scholarships. And today I'm going to be moderating the session. And even though the session was going to be developed in Spanish, some participations will be made in English. And in order to have, we have interpretation to Spanish and English, and so you can activate by clicking the globe bound below the screen and selecting your preferred language. So if you select Spanish, all the participation will be heard in Spanish or in English otherwise. Well, before I start, I'd like to mention two things. The first one is to apologize if at any point I don't use the inclusive language, because as you know, Spanish is a very male-oriented language, so I'm not used to presenting in Spanish. I speak, so I apologize in advance. And also, I'd like to ask you to please take a moment to introduce yourselves in the chat. What's your name, where you are calling from, and what is your institution, and what brings you here? And so it would be really important for us to know a little bit about that. So if you can use the chat to introduce yourselves and send that information to us. Next slide, please. So, first, I'm going to have a very quick summary of the agenda. We're going to start with some welcome words from Sally Bonner. She's the director of the Caring Foundation. Sally has been working for over 20 years in this sector and philanthropy as an executive director since the foundation was created in 2008. And she has been working in the intersections of violence against women and children, and promoting a collaborative work to increase the impact of the organization and to improve the li better lives of women and children. Also, we're going to have the director of the Elizabeth Ara, who is going to be talking about this, Elizabeth Darna, who is going to be talking about the, she's going to be explaining in detail what we talk about when we deal with the issues of intersections between the violence against women and violence against children. And also, we're going to have the director of research director of SVRI, Sangeeta Chatri, who's the leader of this project, and who is going to be able to respond to any questions that you may have. Lisa and Sangeeta are going to be speaking English, so you can continue listening to the interpretation channel you have chosen. So now we're going to start with the welcome word from Celine, and then thank you very much, Celine. Thank you very much for the presentation. Welcome to everybody. I'm very happy to be here today to launch this scholarship. The foundation, Caring Foundation was founded in 2008 with the only purpose of combating gender violence, all kinds of machismo violence. Caring is an international group of luxury products whose main employees are and staff members are women. So we wanted to focus mainly on women worldwide. In 2023, we reviewed our strategy. We decided to widen it to include violence against children. This is something that we heard a lot of our members to see what intersections that were found in our work. So, for example, some of the women who were talking about survivors of incest and other kinds of violence against women in their childhood. And these conversations were catalyzed so that we had to begin to think about how to work both gender violence and gender and violence against children with the purpose of putting an end to violences that are transmitted from generation to generation. How to work in the generation in our foundation, we support national and local organizations, six countries, France, where we have our headquarters, Italy, Korea, Mexico, the United Kingdom, and the United States. And we're centered on the focus on survivors and in the prevention. We are very delighted to be able to launch this new research program with coordination with SBRI, with the McGill University too. It is the first one, and we are really enthusiastic about this. The purpose with this initiative for 3 years is to strengthen research based on evidence and directed to the local context so that we can understand how the violence against children and just violence can interweave and how we can identify it through program services and interventions. We also, with this program, we would like to foment a better cooperation with low and mid-income countries, where SBRI is focusing its work, and where we have more need for research and institutions and high-income organizations like McGill, sorry. So there will be seminars, conferences, and the spreading of results in those 3 years of collaboration. On one side, the McGill University is going to be focused on interfamily violence and child abuse. And the idea is to provide, to echo the voice of the children, researchers, and people interested in working in the children's rights in places, in homes, and in France and Canada. And on the other hand, SBRI is going to be supporting researchers that are beginning their careers in BEPIM through doctorate and postdoctorate scholarships. But SBRI will tell you more about this in detail. In our foundation, Caring Foundation, we really hope that this research program can contribute to global cooperation to strengthen research and to close the gap between research and the programming with you, our next generation of researchers. And of course, to contribute to a world where the women and children can live without violences and can progress and prosper. Now, I'd like to invite Liz to continue. Thank you in advance for all of you who are planning to submit their request. We really want to see what you're going to be working on and the new ideas that you're going to be providing to this very important fight. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Celine, and thank you for your opening words, and thank you for working with us on this really super exciting new initiative. And so I'm really excited to be here and being part of this launch, to launch research fellowships for early career researchers working at the intersections of violence against women and violence against children. For the SBRI, our role is to advance research that is rigorous, ethical and grounded in local realities, and to really make sure that evidence that is gathered is actually used. And we know that's why we do our research, to make a difference. So we support researchers to connect people across sectors and to work to ensure that evidence informs policy and practice with a clear focus on work led by researchers, as Celine said, by researchers in low and middle-income countries. But why intersections between violence against women and violence against children? For the field, addressing these intersections really does matter. These are distinct forms of violence, but they do share underlying risk factors that can reinforce one another in people's lives. And we see this across the life course. For example, the links between early victimization and later vulnerability or perpetration. And these patterns are shaped by context, and they need careful ethical research to understand. At the same time, These fields have largely developed in silos, which make these connections really quite easy to miss or not address. So one of the roles of both this project and the SRI is to help to try bring these conversations together through shared research agendas, which is something I'm going to talk about just after this, as well as locally led evidence and spaces for learning and collaboration, including the SRI forum, which we would really love you all to join us in Bangkok in October this year. Advancing the evidence is, however, more about than just funding research. It depends on people, it depends on you, researchers who are rooted in the places that they study and are able to stay in the field over time. Early career researchers, in particular, often face funding gaps, limited support, few opportunities to grow. And at times, working in this field, we know can be quite lonely. And that's why these types of fellowships and this support from Kering is so important and is designed to respond to this. They provide funding, mentorship, and opportunities to publish, connect with peers, and to help become part of this global network working on these intersections. And really importantly to us, they are helping build the next generation of leaders in the field. And we're really delighted to be working with Dr. Delphine Collin-Vezina and her team at the Center for Research on Children and Families at McGill University, who, as Celine spoke about, are leading a complementary capacity strengthening program as part of this initiative supported by Kering. So, as I mentioned, I'm now going to talk about the global research priority setting exercise that SVRI has been stewarding with UNICEF Innocenti and the World Health Organization. And we are using this work to help shape the research questions we want to be seen taken up through these fellowships. Next slide, please. So that is, oh, and the next slide, please. And then the slide after. Thank you. So that's why we thought it was really important to share the agenda with you, how we developed it, and why we came about it. So, first of all, let's talk about why research priority setting is important. And I think everybody knows this, but for a long time, research agendas in this field have been shaped by a fairly small group of voices, often those with money, the power and the seniority or institutional power. And this hasn't been intentional or nasty. It really has meant that, but it has meant that some knowledge carries more weight than others, and some questions get asked again and again, while others don't. So that's why research priority setting matters, because our research resources are limited. And what we choose to study shapes what gets funded, what gets implemented, and what eventually gets scaled. So we really wanted to do priority setting differently. So what we did was we, together with the WHO and the UNICEF Innocenti team, adapted a well-established research priority setting approach called the CHINRI method or CHNRI method. But use it in a way that was more open and inclusive, and at its core is about drawing on the collective experience of the field rather than just relying on a small group of powerful experts, which has historically happened in the past. So people working in different roles and contexts were invited to contribute, and everybody's input has been treated equally. And so in doing so, it really reduces the influence of hierarchy and seniority and stops any one perspective from dominating in the process. And so we found by bringing these different views together, patterns did emerge and priorities that reflected shared experience across settings rather than the loudest in the room were truly being reflected. So, how do we do it? Next slide, please. This slide shows the advisory structures that we used to really frame the work that we were doing in terms of the development of the priority setting, and they were essential all the way through the process. The advisors on are listed in this really helped shape both the research questions, but they also played a real practical role, opening doors to wider networks and flagging where voices or regions were missing in the process. Throughout the process, we stayed in regular contact with the advisory group and the wider field through webinars, online check-ins. So the process didn't feel like a fixed or rigid process, or that it was a once-off opportunity for people to engage in identifying priorities for the field. It ensured this process helped us keep it iterative, responsive, and really grounded in what the field says are priorities for the field. Next slide, please. So just briefly, this slide shows the 7 steps we follow to develop the research agenda. I'm not going to go into each step in deeply, and I'm going to pick up on a few key ones in the next slides. But in brief, we started by agreeing broad domains to organize the work. We then invited stakeholders globally to identify and suggest research questions, like generating hundreds of researcher questions within these domains. Then we used a small set of criteria that were developed in partnership with our advisory structures to score the questions, analyze, and rank them. And then we validated or sense-checked the findings through discussions at the a previous S4I forum, as well as through validation webinars. And the final process was then published and shared so they could inform research funding and action and the work of the SVRI. So next slide, please. I just want to briefly talk about the domains because they were really important, because they shaped how we did this work. And they were shaped by existing evidence reviews, which will be shared in the chat. And then they were refined with input from the coordinating group and advisory group. So we didn't just depend on the evidence or of published evidence. We also included experts and global experts, experts being all of you in the room that were participating in this process. And the aim was to create a shared way of organizing a very wide range of research questions. And at a high level, the domains cover how violence against women and violence against children intersect, what works to prevent and to respond to that violence, how evidence is generated and measured, and how, meaning how do we do the science of this work, and how different sectors work together, and very importantly, how policy influences action. The research questions were then grouped under each of these domains and then ranked by the participants through a survey. And they looked at things like the relevance and potential impact of the questions if they were to be answered, how much a question would add to their evidence base, and whether or not the question was realistically answerable. It was it feasible, including whether the findings were likely to inform policy and practice. So again, really grounded in impact on whether or not these questions are going to make a difference in our field. Next slide, please, Paula. In terms of the process, we were very intentional and mindful about diversity, equity, inclusion. Advisory group members, as I said, played an essential role by reaching out to their networks and acting as ambassadors for the agenda. We also closely monitor responses alongside our advisors as the responses came in to this from the survey and followed up where we saw participation being low, particularly from underrepresented regions or groups. Then, as mentioned, we used a mix of webinars, platforms, targeted outreach to make sure people continued to be engaged as the process unfolded. And the survey was done in multiple languages, and we tried to ensure that it was designed in an easy to use and accessible way. I'm not sure we were successful in that, and we've tried to build on that in future priority setting processes. But together, I really do believe these steps helped ensure broader participation and a wider range of perspectives. Next slide, please. So, who participated? As a result of these efforts, we got 153 people from more than 50 countries. Most were working directly on violence against women or violence against children, and some were working at the intersections between these forms of violence. Most respondents were practitioners, service providers, as well as researchers, as well as a strong participation and representation from low and middle income countries, which we were super excited about. Participants also included people with disabilities, people from Indigenous communities, people who identify as LGBTQI+, and people from a very wide range of racial and ethnic backgrounds to ensure there was real diversity in the people identifying these priorities. So, what did we find? Next slide, please. So here are the top 5 questions, and I'm not going to read these out, but so the report is available online to you. But when you look across them, a few things do stand out. There's a strong focus on integration, how programs, policies, and systems can address violence against women and violence against children together rather than in parallel. There's also a clear emphasis on prevention, particularly through things like parenting interventions. That we that you know the field has said, how can we reduce multiple forms of violence through one form of intervention? Measurement also comes across really high, especially the need for more innovative and valid ways to measure violence in low resource settings, using participatory approaches, and how to do so ethically. And finally, in this top group of top five questions, there's a real call for a shared language, shared frameworks, so the evidence on these intersections actually supports coordination, collaboration in practice. Next slide, please. The next five questions or priorities build on these, but shift the focus a little bit with a strong emphasis on collaboration, particularly the barriers and opportunities for the two sectors to work together at global, regional, national, and local levels. There's also a real clear interest in understanding how prevention interventions work, what is making them work, and how do we evaluate primary prevention more rigorously across both violence against women and violence against children. And adolescence comes through really strongly as well, including the forms of violence adolescents experience both offline and online, and how adolescent girls are or aren't adequately addressed in existing policies. Together, these questions really highlight the need for better coordination, stronger prevention science, and closer attention to adolescents, especially in digital contexts. Next slide, please. We also took a look at whether or not the priorities differed by the participants' characteristics. Overall, there was so much agreement, suggesting a real shared sense across the field of what matters most. There were a few minor differences. Those working mainly in violence against children tended to rank parenting more highly, while people working across both violence against women and violence against children placed parenting a little less high. But these were so minor, it didn't seem to make too much of a difference. We did find that respondents that were based in low- and middle-income countries leaned more to solutions or intervention research, while those in high-income countries were more likely to prioritize more policy-focused questions. Again, not huge. We also saw some variation amongst groups that are often not represented in research, which reinforces the importance of building evidence that reflects different experiences and contexts. So just a few reflections before I pass back to Clara. Next slide, please. One, this work has really showed us the value of a life course perspective, and particularly looking at the intersections from early childhood, adolescence, and pregnancy, where we know prevention and response efforts can really have a longer term impact. So we need to start early, we need to do things often and over a long period of time. Another is the growing importance of digital spaces. There really is a clear concern about the harm and misuse, especially for adolescents, but also interest in how tools like on the digital platforms can be used responsibly to support prevalence, prevention, measurement, and response. There was also a strong signal that we need to engage more directly with the issue of perpetration, and we have just had a really wonderful webinar on this, which we can share more in the links to in the chat. And we need to be paying more closer attention who is causing the harm, because we will not end violence against children, child sexual violence, or violence against women if we do not engage with the issue of perpetration, why it occurs, how shared risk factors often sit behind violence against both women and children, as well as victimization and perpetration. But of course, what's really important in addition to all that is that these priorities aren't meant to sit on the shelf. They're already being used to inform ongoing work with partners like the World Health Organization and UNICEF, and they are shaping the work that we are doing at the S3RI, supported by wonderful colleagues like Kieran. So broadening participation strengthens not only the legitimacy of this agenda, it also improves its relevance and usefulness for policy and practice. I just want to now, next slide, please, just say a huge thank you to everybody who contributed to this work. It was shaped by a genuinely diverse, passionate group of people, from our coordinating advisory teams to colleagues from over 15 countries. 50 countries, thank you so much. This really was a collective effort. Thank you very much. And now I'm going to hand back to Clara to keep us moving forward. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Liz, and thank you for clarifying and for sharing the results of this shared agenda. We hope that this has been useful in understanding the kinds of research that we are looking for in this space. Now we are going to move to another section, which is much more specific in this VRI scholarships. First, one of the objectives is to strengthen evidence of the intersections between the violence against women and violence against children. And when we based this knowledge base, we really would like to inform this, and particularly with the response initiatives. This program is also developed to empower researchers in the initial stages of their careers, and so that they can continue working in the low and mid-income countries. We would like to do this in this way because this is where there are less opportunities for financing, and also to be pro to provide the necessary resources that researchers can develop their research projects in their professional careers. Additionally, to the resources, the financial resources, as VRI is also offering mentoring and training and some other elements that to help you become leaders that you can develop in your project. We'd also like to make sure that your work is also widely known, and for that, the scholarship award is. We really want to make sure that the results are sent to those interested and those responsible for policy making. And also, we'd like to support the research networks at a local and global levels, creating some research practices that can be sustained with time. Next slide, please. Well, at the moment, SBRI is offering the doctoral and postdoctoral scholarships. In the first year, there will be two scholarships for each one, two for doctoral and two for postdoctoral levels. Each scholarship can last up to 2 years to provide people with the time and stability to concentrate on their research. In terms of doctoral levels, we're offering $17,000 per year. And for postdoctoral studies, we are offering up to $20,500 per year. Next slide, please. The request for eligibility. The people submitting proposals has to live in low and mid-income countries. At the moment, we're going to share the link in the chat to see if your country qualifies for this. This ensures that the research we receive people participating from the places of countries where the scholars are more active. These people have to be registered in an academic organization and located in a low mid-income country, and you have to living there. And this is a very important requirement because we would like to support people who are already involved with their local communities. And people who are requesting this, they don't need to be working directly with the institution, but that they can propose a institution that where they can work, for that they can provide a letter of understanding for the contributing to the development of this scholarship. And also, if we you can suggest specifically research projects that specifically address women, the violence against women and violence against children. And now we have shared the shared agenda that in the chat. Next slide, please. So, what is the eligibility requirement for the doctoral candidates? You have to have a proposal for a defined thesis that has been approved by the institution. And for postdoctoral levels, you have to have finished your PhD or your doctoral studies in the last 3 years from January the 23rd, Thursday the 31st, 2023. And of course, those of you who have already finished your course are working on your thesis dissertations. And for people who are candidates to a postdoctorate, have to have you have to have completed your PhD since the deadline for your submissions, which is 31st of January 2023, 2026. That is to say, you have had to finish your PhD studies or your doctoral studies between the 31st of January to date. Next slide, please. We encourage. So we also offer a preference of eligibility. People who are coming from places that are underrepresented with minority groups. And also, we are looking for candidates that can demonstrate a clear compromise and long-term commitment to the advancement of the rights of women and children. This is not only about also academic achievement, but also to support people who are committed to developing impacts in the community directly. This is the next slide, please. This is also considered in general for the evaluation criteria. The evaluators are going to consider how the proposed research contributes to knowledge all the intersections with violence against women, violence against children. Stronger proposals are going to help understand gaps in knowledge and provide the analysis in this field. The quality are central. We're gonna be checking if the framework is strong and compatible with our priorities. And given these sensitive areas, we are giving importance to the ethical approach on these aspects. The issues of confidentiality and all the ethical considerations for research. The budget has to be realistic and adjust to the purpose of the project. Of course, we are going to have a question and answer session where we can explain and respond and reply to all your questions. So, next slide, please. So, the evaluation process starts with the four steps. The first one is the SVRI staff will review the applications so that they meet all the requirements. The second one, we're going to have a short list of people who have been pre-selected. And then the third one of these, the people who have been pre-selected are going to be invited to an interview with external experts and Karen Foundation representatives. This is going to be happening between February and April, and the final results are published in May 2026. Next slide, please. How to apply? You can complete the proposal to the Proposal Central only there. And in order to do that, you have to create a user. Once you have created a user, you will receive all the information you have requested that we're requesting, and that is also in our database in Spanish. And in a moment, we're going to send you a link together with the requirements. Next slide, please. So the request can be admitted in English, French, and Spanish. You can do it in the language that you prefer. And the deadline for receiving these proposals has to be the 31st of January 2026 at just before midnight, just South African time. So please check the international time so that you can meet this requirement. Because if you send it afterwards, don't pay attention to, I mean, don't consider the, your local hour in Latin America, but the hour in South Africa. Next slide, please. Regarding the contents of the request or your submissions, everything has been explained in the Proposal Center website. But in general, the registration format you can find and that you have to submit include professional objectives. What are your professional goals in the long run, in your professional career, and how your the scholarship would help you achieve those objectives. You also have to think about the declaration of community impact. You have to describe how your work is going to impact the community and is going to improve the security, safety, and well-living of women and girls, and also of the community together, which can include boys or men, etc. And finally, the research proposal that you can find in the format in the proposal center. As we have said, the requirement has to be fulfilled, completed online. And as you move on, you can be saving. You don't have to complete at one go. So we strongly recommend that so you complete the whole thing. You can access this website and you can see the requirements. Don't forget to upload the following documents, which is a letter from the academic institution that verifies your academic status and your nationality, the academic certificates from the last 2 years, and two letters of recommendations from your director or an academic or scholar person in your institution. Next slide, please. And finally, the last slide is a series of links that we're going to offer in the chat, and also the emails where you can send us questions if you have questions about the eligibility criteria or on the themes. You can ask SVRI at svri.org. And if you have any issue with the platform, the technical point of submissions, you can send an email to the list last address down the screen. And now we're going to open the space for questions from the audience. I think that there was a question already, but you can add your questions in the chat, and Sangeeta and me are going to be responding your questions. Thank you very much. Is there an age limit? My answer is no. Sangeeta?
Correct. There is no age limit.
Yeah, there is
Yes.
no limit. Does that mean that so th this means that the publication has to be linked to the university? So if you have to publish only with the university that's supporting her? I'm sorry, I didn't understand the question. Just a second. The person's not here. Okay, sorry. I have not defended my thesis proposal. I just finished the first year of my doctorate. Does that exclude me? I understand. It is my understanding that no, you're not excluded. Ideally, you should have completed all the courses, but if you have a thesis proposal that has been approved by your university, you can submit your proposal. You can participate. Okay. I'm from Argentina and I work in a research group affiliated to the University of Argentina. But I'm living in Europe. Can I apply? It is my understanding that it's no. If you are living in Europe, then you're going to continue living in Europe for your postgraduate studies or doctorate studies, you're not eligible. Is that correct,
Yeah.
Peter? Yeah.
It depends on what university, where the university they're affiliated with is located. If the university where they're doing their research is located in a low and middle income country, and if they are also a national of a low and middle income country, then they are eligible for the fellowship. So both of those criteria would have to be met.
So yes, if you are developing your research, you can apply. If you're affiliated to a university in Argentina, then you can participate. Sorry, was speaking in the wrong channel. I've just seen some questions in the chat. I am in the first doctorate year. I am just submitting my proposal between October and November. I understand that in this case, I wouldn't be able to apply to this particular call. Is that true? I would like to know if this is going to be a yearly call for participation. Sangeeta before, please.
Yes, we're going to announce we will open for applications next year as well. We currently have funding for this year and the following year, and then we'll update you through our weekly update to let you know when we have more funding opportunities in the future. So please do apply next year when you would have hopefully submitted your dissertation proposal and gotten approval for it.
If I am chosen with a scholarship, is there any restriction to continue having in the same university that is supporting me? So it is my understanding that you will be doing a postdoctoral research with that university, or but there is no restriction. So there are no restrictions that you can keep a working relationship with the university, but the university, but the doctorate or postdoctoral degree has to be from that university.
Lara, could you clarify the question for me in English, please? Just so I'm not sure I fully understood. Sorry, Clara. For postdoctoral, I mean, for postdoctoral, if you, and I may have misunderstood, but if you are applying for a postdoctoral fellowship, you don't need to continue and do your postdoctoral fellowship at the university where you got your PhD. You can choose to go to any other university. And if you, for, and you know, if, you may be in a situation where you're almost done with your PhD or have submitted and still don't ha haven't identified a place for your postdoctoral fellowship, that would be an issue because we do need a letter of support from a university that can host you for your postdoctoral fellowship if you do get the fellowship. So we would need to see some sort of arrangement with an institution that can support you for your postdoctoral fellowship.
I hope this is clear. If not, apologies, you can rewrite your question. Alexander says, good afternoon, I'm from Chile, and apparently my country is a high-income country. We have lived with experienced some political and social violences, particularly now that we have a ultra-rightist government. Can I still apply? Your country is not qualifying as the low mid income, so the answer is no. Sorry. We know that there are a lot of human rights violations around the world. Can we apply to this to other sources of financing? Yes, I think there is no problem if you are receiving, if you're receiving from, if you are receiving help from the general SVRI scholarships or. So if we receive finances from SVRI through our SVRI research grants, if you can still apply to this particular scholarship.
Yes, that should not disqualify you. But then you would have to, but you know, the purpose of the two funding mechanisms is very different, right? The purpose of the main grant is to support sort of larger research projects that are being undertaken by nonprofit organizations, universities, and consortiums. Whereas this fellowship opportunity is for early career researchers. And so you should propose an independent project that you will be leading yourself, because the goal is to support you to grow as a leader in the field. And I'll also ask Preeti to just come in. Preeti is our Director of Grants Management and Impact and actually oversees our large grant funding mechanism, to see if she would like to add something to this as well.
Sangeeta, I think you've captured it correctly. The purpose for these fellowships is very different than the purpose for the long format SVRI annual grant making mechanism we have. So unfortunately for this year, the funding window is closed, but please check back our website in mid-2026 to check for any announcements for the next call of proposal, which is not fellowships, but which is grants for research and is not limited only to students.
Thank you, Betty. I think that the question was specifically if you
Okay, so you mean that if they already are our grant partners, can they apply for this one? So my answer would be no, because SVRI already has funded, and we really hope and request that the candidate talks to the principal investigator of the grant that the SVRI has funded to see if they can support the capacity building of the doctoral, the postdoctoral fellow, because both the grants give a lot of importance to capacity building and supporting early career researchers. So I really urge whoever is asking to talk to the PI of the grant that SVRI has already made to them to see if their doctoral or postdoctoral studies can be supported. Unless you want to add something, Sangeeta.
No, I think that's correct. Thanks, Preeti.
Thank you very much. We are getting to the specific details, and thank you very much for the support from Priti and Sangeeta. And we continue because there are a few. Is there any restrictions regarding the themes? My thesis is on abortion, and I'd like to know if this is something that can be receiving finances. In this case, we are seeking specific research on violence against women and children. So the only question is if my understanding would be no. Nagita is going to respond to this.
Thanks for that question. And I think one of the difficulties for us to answer this, for Clara or Preeti or me to answer it, is that we don't really know the scope of your project and how it sort of fits within the intersections of violence against women and violence against children. So we would need far more detail for us to be able to review and say whether it fits into the scope. So what we encourage you to do is to look at the shared research agenda on violence to see what the research gaps at the intersection of violence against women and violence against children look like. And if your research, even if it's on abortion, looks at those intersections, then please apply for the fellowship.
So if you review this, if you still have any questions, you can send us to the email at svri@svri.org. So we can help you directly if it is possible or not. Sandra? Sandra? I am finishing my undergraduate in Peru. Talk about children and adolescents. So, what is the specific profile that you're looking for, or the project of being admitted to this seminar? I don't understand the question very well. So, undergraduate? Oh. Oh. No, we are offering support to people who are studying their PhD, so to doctorate studies. In the last, they are almost finishing their doctorate studies. Undergraduate, this is college. No, so the answer is no. Undergraduate is. No, what we're looking for is. Student, a doctorate students or postdoctoral students. Not undergraduate, sorry. When you get to the doctoral studies and you're working on this topic, please consider your application here. We'll continue with the questions. Paula, is there any format for the letter that the university has to issue? I think that is a basic format. Sangeeta can tell us better to this question.
We've not put out a format that you need to follow to get a letter from your university, because different universities may have different regulations. But you can, it's easy to find a format if you do a Google search. But and we have provided guidance for what the letter needs to sort of tell us. It basically needs to cover how you are eligible for the fellowship. So it needs to note your nationality. And in terms of your application eligibility, whether you have received approval for your dissertation proposal or if you have finished your PhD. So there's some basic information that the letter needs to cover, and that detail is available when you go in both the requests for proposals that Paula has shared in the chat, as well as when you go to Proposal Central, the online application system that you will need to apply for the fellowships, that information should be there. But if you have any questions regarding the letter, please feel free to email us at svri@svri.org, and we can assist you with that.
So I continue with the next question from Paula. How will be the payment for resources for research? If those are received by the university or of the person who is a candidate?
The person, they would have to provide us with a budget, and then we would disburse based on the budget, but it would get paid out to the individual. That's right, Preeti, right?
Milton Guzman, my postdoctoral study. I have to develop the research in Colombia, where I'm going to be doing my research. Exactly. It has to be in your country of origin through a university in your country. And the it's a country of origin. But it's better said it's a low or mid-income country. So if you are working in Colombia, if you're working, but you can do research in the with a university from Ecuador or Peru, for example. This is something that can happen, but it has to be low or mid-income country. If we are working in a advocacy of human rights, can we request a letter of recommendation from the organization like this on human rights advocacy? This is not, I think that in this scholarship, you can only do this through Throughout the academic organization or institution, not on an NGO. Is that correct, Sangeeta? Because it has to be a doctorate project or postdoctoral project.
Yes.
Both for Mara and for the other person from Chile. We encourage you to check all our scholarships, the SBRI research grants. They are much more wider, and we announce them each year. We open the call for participation around July, if I'm not mistaken, and they happen every year. Because some of the people who are not eligible for these scholarships or grants can be eligible for these honors. So you're going to be the link right now in the chat. And now we're about to finish with our meeting today because we are going over time. So this. You can check what this is about and around July, you open the call for participation. I have a profile for a postdoctorate, and I also have the university. So I really hope that this has been helpful and that everything is clear now and that you can apply to the grants. Thank you very much for being here today. And I hope. We hope to be able to see your submissions. Thank you very much to all of you. Thank you and a huge hug. Bye.